listening to Richie Allen on the UK's biggest independent news radio show. Have your say by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Election officials in the U.S. state of Georgia say the Democrats' lead in two Senate races is now only expected to grow as the final votes are counted. That means the party is on the cusp of securing control of the U.S. Senate, a huge blow to Republican hopes of being able to confound President-elect Joe Biden at every turn. It's already apparent that Senator Kelly Loeffler has lost her election bid to the Reverend Raphael Warnock. He spoke this morning on MSNBC.
I can't tell you how honored I am that the people of my home state, where I was born and raised and educated at Morehouse College, have decided to send me to the United States Senate. It's a time when people are suffering in so many ways. As a pastor, you know, I'm used to walking alongside people at their high moments and their low moments, and it's the honor of my life that I get to represent the people of this very great state.
In the other race, Democrat challenger John Ossoff is ahead of Senator David Perdue. Turnout data indicates that many rural Republicans stayed home, choosing not to participate in an election that President Trump falsely claimed was at risk of being rigged. In Washington, thousands of President Trump supporters are taking to the streets, urging Congress later today to block Joe Biden's presidential win. FSN's Nick Harper is with them.
Here in the center of Washington, D.C., thousands of supporters are gathering for a day of protests. Many of them are carrying flags, some reading Trump 2020, others with slogans like Keep America Great Again. They're here to support the president in his efforts to overturn the election. Many of them, like the president, believing that Joe Biden fraudulently stole the election from them.
Vice President Mike Pence is presiding over that joint session of Congress, where a dozen Republican senators and more than 140 Republicans in the House of Representatives say they will lodge protests over the election results. There is no prospect for Joe Biden's victory to be overturned. The U.S. recorded a record number of COVID-19 deaths on Tuesday, 3,775. Hospitalizations also hit new record highs. The European Union has given the Moderna vaccine the green light for use. Along with the Pfizer-BioNTech shot, it's the second vaccine that can be used throughout the bloc. From FSN's Europe desk in Brussels, Lucy Hoff has more.
This is a significant moment for Europe. This is the second vaccine to be authorized on the EU's portfolio, and it could make a huge difference. It is easier to transport than the Pfizer-BioNTech shot. The EU has ordered 160 million doses, and crucially, it doesn't need to be stored on dry ice.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been denied bail by a British court. He'll continue to be held in custody pending an American appeal against the blocking of his extradition. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Simon. There's no justification whatsoever for keeping Julian Assange in custody here in the UK. It's a disgrace, but I don't need to tell you that. Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, the 6th of January, 2021. I've not yet called it 2020.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Not yet anyway, but give it a couple of days and I probably will.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
I think Professor Dolores Cahill is a very important woman these days. Was on the program with me a couple of months back. She'll be back with us this evening in hour two. Professor of Translational Science at University College in Dublin. Going to catch up with Professor Dolores Cahill. We're going to talk about mRNA vaccines and more. Before that, Piers Corbyn will be on the program. He assures me today. Looking forward to that. He's announced recently, very recently, he plans to stand for Mayor of London. We'll talk with Piers Corbyn this hour. And as usual, you can join in the chat, as it were, through Twitter. It's at one Richie Allen on Twitter. One as in the number one, at one Richie Allen. You can tweet the absolute living bejesus out of me. How are you today? Oh, it was cold last night. -7 degrees in Salford overnight. Didn't feel it in bed now. Felt it when I went out this morning, though. Busy programme today. Mark Bajerski, great friend of ours, I would say, mine, ours, wonderful man, will be on this program tomorrow. Do check out markbyerski.com. He's got something very important, disturbing, but important to tell us about healers and their ability to heal at this particular time. You don't want to miss that. That's tomorrow on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Tomorrow, January 7th, that's right. So Chris Whitty, Paddy Valenson, Boris Johnson, yesterday afternoon when I was on air speaking with you, laid out the justification for the new national lockdown that can go on until March 31st if necessary. Okay? We're in national lockdown now since midnight yesterday, I think. Yeah, or the day before yesterday. Anyway, and it can go on until March 31st. Yeah. Here's a scary moment from the Chief Medical Officer, Chris Whitty, the aforementioned. Have a listen.
What is going to happen over time is the risk level is gradually going to decrease. It's not going to be it's really bad and then suddenly it stops. We're going to essentially have the risk walking down a path. Things will be able to be lifted by degrees, possibly at different rates in different parts of the country. We'll have to see. And the government has made very clear that ministers prioritise education, for example, as one of the things that would go early, but that's a ministerial decision very much. But things will be lifted stage by stage. And we'll then get, over time, to a point where people say this level of risk is one that society is prepared to tolerate and lift, you know, right down to almost no restrictions at all. We might have to bring a few in the next winter, for example. That is possible, because winter will benefit the virus. But the aim of this is to de-risk it as much as possible by the vaccine to the point where actually we get to the stage where the risk is incredibly low relative to where we are now. I mean, we just say, just as we do with flu, where every year, roughly on an average year, about 7,000 people a year die. In a bad year, up to 20,000 people a year die. We accept there is a level of risk that society will tolerate, and we should tolerate. People die, that's one of the things that happens, and we have to do that at a certain point. But that's a political decision, that's a societal decision.
Oh God!
We might have to bring a few in the next winter, for example.
Restrictions next winter!
Surprise, surprise. Yes. The unexpected hits you between the eyes.
That's the surprise, you see. Surprise, surprise. Restrictions next winter, restrictions next winter. Veto, restrictions next winter, eh?
I knew that was coming.
I knew that was coming too. We're never getting out of restrictions. The Richie Allen Show, 2048. How are you doing? We're never going to see the back of these restrictions. And on March 31st, there's the possibility for the end of this lockdown. I don't write a script, you see. I do speak like this. On the concern that this lockdown might go on until March 31st, for the best part of 3 months then, Graham Brady, Sir Graham Brady, if you please, 1922 backbench committee, he asked the Health Secretary Matt Hancock today in Parliament. You see, Hancock opened a debate on the new lockdown. No point in the debate, no point in the vote, because it's a retrospective vote. They've already signed into law this new lockdown. Anyway, Graham Brady said, I'm a bit worried about us being stuck in lockdown until March 31st. Here's the exchange.
Approving these regulations today would allow for lockdown for 3 months until the end of March. You will have heard my exchange with the Prime Minister earlier when the Prime Minister said that he didn't think we would have to wait that long for an opportunity to choose whether to end the regulations or not. Will he go further now and give a commitment to a further vote at the end of January and at the end of February so this House will have control over what is happening?
Well, what I'd say to my right honourable friend is that while these regulations do provide for new restrictions until the end of March, this is not because we expect the full national lockdown to continue until then, but to allow the steady, controlled and evidence-led move down through the tiers on a local basis, and those tiers changes do require a vote in Parliament. The restrictions will therefore be kept under continuous review. There is a statutory requirement to review every 2 weeks and a legal obligation to remove them if they're no longer deemed necessary to limit the transmission of the virus.
Yeah. We'll be in lockdown until the spring. Have no doubt about that. Now, Tony Bastard Scuttery Arse Blair. That's his Catholic name, by the way. When Blair converted to Catholicism for his wife, Cherie, they didn't tell him that he could take another half a dozen middle names, as we did when we made our confirmation. They gave one that they chose themselves without telling Blair. Bastard Scuttery Arse is his new middle name. He was on Good Morning. If you're not from Ireland, you'll have to look up Scuttery. He was on Good Morning Britain this morning. I don't know if you've noticed this, but Tony Blair has gotten a new lease of life. He looked very ill for very long, like he was waiting for the demons to seep through the pavement cracks and drag his miserable arse to hell. But this misery now, this lockdown, telling people what to do and vaccinating them, seems to have put a spring in the step of the scumbag, doesn't it? He's looking a bit better, is Anthony Scuttery Arse Bastard Blair. Listen to this cut. Blair apparently would walk 500 miles and Blair apparently would walk 500 more to get the vaccine himself.
Yeah, of course. Look, if you told me I could go and get the vaccine now, if I went and queued for 3 hours to get it, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well,
yes, of course.
Exactly, of and course. We've had somebody who said they're...
It's going to become, by the way...
So I was just going to say, Tony Blair, someone who said their elderly mum would go out at 3 o'clock in the morning to get it. I mean, I think this is the thing, isn't it? If you had to wait for it, if you had to queue for it, if you had to go at a ridiculous antisocial time of the day, you would just go and get it.
Absolutely, 100%. Because, by the way, the other thing that's going to happen, and I don't... There are two things, in addition, we've got to prepare for. One is, I don't think we have the proper data systems yet, and we've got to get them. We need to know every single piece of information as this vaccination program proceeds, because it will tell us an immense amount about what's working and what's not working. But the second thing is that I think you will get to the stage where it's going to be very hard for people to do a lot of normal life unless they can prove their vaccination status.
Yeah.
I think you'll find a situation where countries say to you, you're not coming in here unless we see whether you've either been vaccinated, you've had the disease and have got antibodies, or you've had a recent high-quality test. And so if people have got to understand, vaccination is going to be, in the end, your route to liberty.
Just in case you missed it.
People have got to understand
People have got to understand.
People have got to understand vaccination is going to be, in the end, your route to liberty.
There are things I'd like to say, but I can't say them because they might end up in me being prosecuted under hate speech legislation. There are things I'd like to say, but I won't say them. They don't involve violence, believe it or not. Things I would like to say about Tony Blair and things I would like to see happen to him in the next life, that is, in the next life. But I won't say anything here today. Avi Lazarov is a South African businessman. He works in DNA testing and genetics. He was on Sky News today to tell us the testing and passports will become very, very normal in the very near future.
Exactly that. Testing as part of our everyday lives, health passports potentially as familiar as the ticket that you would normally carry to the airport. Your health passport would include perhaps not just your vaccination status, but of course your latest tested status as well. There's already been a number of initiatives, for example, the Common Pass Health Framework that has attempted to implement a framework standard for health passports internationally. And I see those innovations as ones that are here to stay moving forward, combined with health COVID-19 testing on within an isolation period as well as prior to departure. Excuse me.
And he later went on to say, but I don't have time, he later went on to say that ultimately we'll be testing ourselves in the home constantly to prove that we're okay, that we're not a threat to our fellow human beings, so that we can be let out to go about our daily business. Marvellous. It is 15 minutes past five on Wednesday, the 6th of January, 2021. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show. We heard from the pathologist John Lee recently. He spends quite a bit of his time speaking to Talk Radio, the Talk Radio that was temporarily kicked off of YouTube. He's a very smart guy, is John Lee. Pathologist, knows his stuff. He was on the Julia Hartley Brewer programme today. The mortality rate is no greater now than in any recent year. This is very important. This is no conspiracy theorist. This is no bloke from around the corner. This is not your Auntie Jane's Facebook page. This is a pathologist of great renown telling you this. Listen.
In a word, we're seeing mortality that's within the envelope, well within the envelope of what normally happens at this time of year. The last 5 years have been a below average number of death years, if you look at the ONS data anyway, compared to the last 27, which is how far their data go back. So the fact is, the deaths we see, you can present these graphs in lots of different ways. And of course, most people aren't very good at looking at graphs, but the envelope within which we're in, we're below the average point of the deaths at this time of year. The question is, what are those deaths attributable to? A lot of them are being attributed to COVID, incorrectly in my view, because of the flawed testing regime. The fact is, the number of deaths, so the total number of deaths from COVID, this figure that we have of 70,000, equates to about one in six deaths over the entire 9 months that we've been looking at this thing. If you accept that about half of those deaths are probably not actually due to COVID, they're due to something else because of the testing problems, actually it's within the envelope of a normal sort of respiratory infection. The fact is, the only sustainable exit for this is for the population to come into equilibrium with the virus. As if you put selective pressure on the virus, it will change into a more easily transmissible form, which we've seen. One thing to look out for in the next few weeks is that because the testing is so inaccurate, as we vaccinate more people, we will get more. It's possible that we'll get more false positive tests. So it's quite possible that as the vaccination goes on, we'll actually see an increased spike in tests, which doubtless the government will become more hysterical about. The fact is, the whole hysteria should stop. The exit for this is that we protect the vulnerable and we let everybody else get back to their normal lives. There is no exit strategy other than coming into equilibrium with this virus. It's out there. We will have to live with it. And by the way, it's not killing everybody. It's actually doing what viruses do, which is killing the vulnerable and the weak and the infirm and the very elderly. That's what they do, I'm afraid. That's a fact of life.
Fact of life, yeah. 'Twas always thus. Viruses, respiratory infections, forever and a day have sadly seen off the infirm, people with comorbidities and very senior people. It is a fact of life. It doesn't mean for a minute that you don't do all that you can for those people, that you don't give them zinc regularly, daily doses of zinc, daily doses of vitamin D3 and vitamin C. That would be nice. Put big heavy sweatshirts on them and ventilate their houses for maybe 30 to 45 minutes a day. I do this every day myself. Every day myself. I get up in the morning, take dogs to park, come back from park. First thing I do, future Mrs. Allen is still in bed, lazy backstirred. I open all the windows downstairs. I turn the gas central heating on upstairs so that the ultimate diva can tiptoe from the bedroom into the bathroom and not feel the cold. And I leave the heating off downstairs and open all the windows. Do this for your senior relatives. Get them out and about. They're not dogs. They're not infants. Get them out. Vitamin D3, zinc, vitamin C, fresh air. What John Lee said is staggering, and it's true. And this is the reason, of course, that only Talk Radio will entertain him, will allow him to visit them. You'll never hear John Lee on Sky News or the BBC. Pathologist who says mortality rates are below the annual average. Below! Right now! And we're being told that we're all in danger from COVID that's running riot and new mutant strains and all the rest of that garbage. 5:19. Yes, I was listening to Jeremy Vine at lunchtime, one of the perks of the job, and he was talking, among other things, about policing and the need to beef up the policing of the lockdown. They want the police to do more, to fine more people, to arrest more people for just leaving their homes. Now, Jeremy Vine takes calls from his listeners. I suppose they're heavily screened calls. And there's nowt so queer as folk, eh? Carol, then. Some of us see dead people, not Carol.
You see people without masks. Well, I have a corner shop, which is actually very, very convenient for me because I have a husband I can't leave too long. And 9 times out of 10, I go in, somebody will come in without a mask, and I'm continually having to tell them off. But I get so many really odd excuses. Either they've forgotten it, or it's a hoax, or they're exempt, or they're only popping in for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And I spoke to the shop owner, and he said, I can't stop these people coming in because I need the revenue.
I need the revenue. Who'd have believed it, eh? Who'd have believed it? That lousy shopkeeper. I can't stop the maskless coming in. Well, because I need their custom, don't you know?
So, you know, he lets them come in maskless.
So you're in there as another customer.
Yeah.
He and you're wearing a mask yourself. You had a word with them at all?
I've told.
You tell them off.
I've told so many people off. I've lost count. I'm getting a frown.
She's getting a frown. Well, turn that frown upside down, Carol. Have a Coke and a smile. Shut the fuck up and mind your own hairy hole, I would say, if I was Jeremy Vine.
Which I never had before.
Oh, dear. And you get people saying it's a hoax. That's interesting.
Yes, so many people think it's a hoax.
Lots of people think it's a hoax. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. Who knows? The pandemic is a hoax. The virus might be real. I have no idea. Might be. But the pandemic, the notion that there's a pandemic, it's deadly. That's bollocks. We know this by their own figures, anyway.
They're often the ones who fall ill, I find.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay.
Thank you, Carol. Vine believes that those who believe it's a hoax are often those who fall ill. Jeremy Vine. 22 minutes past five. Would you believe it? Piers Corbyn is present and correct. He's in his office and will join me in a moment after this song from Nick Lowe. Remember Nick Lowe? Which I heard on the Jeremy Vine show today for the first time in a long time, and I thought you might like to hear it. Welcome to Wednesday's programme. How are you?
You gotta be cruel to be kind in the right manner.
I genuinely hadn't heard that song for at least a decade, and I heard it today on the Jeremy Fine Show, and I thought I'd play it today. I just told you that. Laurie, how you doing, Laurie? Laurie says, Richie, that's telling me my age. I had that song on a 33 and a third album from K-Tel. God be with the days of K-Tel. And if you've got a record collection, a vinyl record collection, as I do, you must have a K-Tel release in there somewhere. Great stuff, that. Hi to Susan. How you doing, Susan? And hi to Donkey. Donkey says that a worker in his local Tesco hassled him 3 times in a row to wear a mask. Each time I said I won't wear one. They don't get my custom anymore. I'll go where I don't get hassled. This brings up wonderful images in my head, Donkey, of some spotty guy, some spotty kid who's in college following you around. Oh, please put a mask on. No. Oh, please. No. Is that how it's going to be? Is it in the future? Let's get Piers Corbyn back on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Don't forget, coming up just after the top of the next hour, just after 6, Dolores Cahill, Professor Dolores Cahill from University College Dublin, will be on the programme. And we will be talking about the mRNA vaccine and her concerns about that. Lots of questions on that. Many of them pretty much dealing with the same issues. We will get through those questions with her when she joins me in the second hour. And while I think of it again, Mark Bajerski will be on the programme tomorrow. He sent me an interesting and concerning email this morning to do with healing and the effect on it the vaccine and multiple vaccines and the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine might have on healers' ability to heal. Ran it by Peter Rebden, great guy Peter. You know that Peter is a healer as well. He said it's something that concerns him, doesn't surprise him. Mark Bajerski on the programme tomorrow. Let's welcome back to the programme the one and only Piers Corbyn. Piers, welcome. Hello, I saw you there a moment ago. Are you there? No, apparently not. If I was a less patient man. Hello, Piers. No sign of him. He might be gone to get a cup of tea or something. Or maybe the fire alarm has gone off again. It's never a dull moment with Piers Corbyn. We'll give him a moment to get on to it. And failing that, we'll move on very swiftly, is what we'll do. Right, keep the tweets coming in. It's @1 Richie Allen on Twitter. @1 that is Richie Allen on Twitter. Let me read one or two more of these tweets there. Number of you pointing me to newspaper stories today about police officers in this country calling for more powers to deal with rule breakers in this lockdown 3. And there are a number of police officers on national radios this morning. There was one or two on LBC programmes. I know there was a guy on Sky News this morning, and they were asking for powers to allow them to go into the homes of people suspected to have more people than allowed in their domiciles. Can you imagine that? You had police officers, some retired, some active police officers, going on radio and television this morning and asking politicians through the medium of television, saying to politicians, give us the power to enter people's homes without their consent if we suspect there are more people in that house than there should be. And no, the radio presenters, the alleged journalists, are not ripping the police officers to pieces. No, they're not. They're saying, yes, we understand that. Well, we'll put that question to the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, next time we have her on the programme. Piers Corbyn, you're finally there. How are you? Hello? He's not there. Okay, we're moving on. We'll move on. He's not there. We're going to move on, and we're just going to move on. Right, it's 5:30. Dolores Cahill will be on the programme with me in the second hour. Lots of questions for her on the mRNA vaccines. Hang on, we'll give him one more chance now. Final chance, Piers Corbyn. Hello? No, he's not there. All right, okay. Okay. I'm a patient man, but even my patience has its limits. We're going to move right on. And I'm going to pretend that I'm not annoyed with Piers Corbyn. I don't give a fuck who you are. This is a live radio show. Mother of God. Right. Music from The Cure, I think. Yes. Back with more chat on Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. I know. Cure, Friday I'm in Love on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Wednesday's programme, and lots and lots of tweets coming in about vaccine passports and health passports and all the rest of it on foot of what Tony Blair had to say to Piers Morgan and his colleagues on Good Morning Britain this morning. It's coming, folks. It really is. I did mention to you a few weeks ago, I mentioned to you before Christmas, October, November time, we were due to be going to see, I think, four different concerts in Manchester at different venues. Tickets that we had bought at different times the previous year. You probably know this now. When fairly big acts or major acts are touring around the world or around the country, the tickets are put on sale months in advance, as you well know. And we had tickets for a number of acts that we like, 70s acts. We had tickets for Jeff Lynne again. I love Jeff Lynne. And we had tickets for Elton John. The oft-mentioned Caroline, my partner, big fan of Elton John's music. And we knew that the likelihood, we knew by the summer, the likelihood of those concerts going ahead was very slim. And indeed, even in the early summer, I think they were cancelled in the early summer. And we chose the option not to be refunded because all but Jeff Lynne said they would reschedule the concerts for 2021 for the same time in 2021, for October, November 2021, right? So 10 months away from now. So anyway, long story short, so they offered the refund and Jeff Lynne actually cancelled full stop and refunded the money, or the promotion company, the promoter of Jeff Lynne actually refunded the money. They didn't reschedule the concert, but everybody else that we got tickets for rescheduled the concerts. But I knew back at the end of last summer, and I know now, there's no way we'll be able to attend those concerts in Manchester this year. It's just not going to happen because we will be expected to have been vaccinated at the very least in order to gain admission to those concerts, even though when those tickets were issued, when they were purchased originally, there were no caveats with those tickets. There were no conditions laid down to people like me and my missus. We weren't told, oh, you'll have to have a vaccine. But what they will say is, they will say, well, tough shit, Paddy, this is the way it is. We're going with the government, we're going with the pandemic. And if you do want to attend that Elton John concert this winter, you will have to have a vaccination. So inevitably, we'll end up selling those tickets. And I've never been a virtue signaller, my friend, you know this. I won't sell them for a profit, of course. I'll sell them for exactly the same money we paid for them, the face value price that we paid at the time. Yeah. So that's how it's going to be. And I don't know what. Somebody said to me the other day, you see, somebody said to me, I tell you what, Baldy, when it becomes apparent to people that they've got to carry passports around with their health information on them, detailed health information, not just information about whether you tested positive or negative for any virus, not just the information about vaccines, but these passports will contain a lot of information about you in the future. And somebody said to me the other day, that will be the stage when the public will roll back. That will be the occasion when the government loses the public and the public will be aghast and the public will say, no, we're not going to live like that. And I hate to be a party pooper. I hate to be pessimistic. I don't agree with that. I think they'll beg for it. I think they're begging for it now. Much as I am well aware that radio stations, radio programmes, employ incredibly manipulative tactics, in order to programme their audiences. I know that, including regularly putting fake phone-in guests on the air to sway people's opinions. I know they do all of that. So don't shout at me. But this time, when you hear people going on Jeremy Vine's programme, when you hear people on Radio 5, when you hear them on LBC, and they're concerned they can't get the vaccine, and they're desperate to get it, I believe them. And I did hear a GP on Radio 5 Live today. I didn't have time to play the clip. In fact, I don't know if I can grab the clip now. Maybe I can't, I don't think. But there was a GP on the Nikki Campbell, Rachel Burden programme, and she said her surgery is inundated with hundreds of calls an hour from people asking, demanding, when will I be getting my vaccine? Why haven't I heard from you? Why has nobody been in touch? Which level of vaccine recipients which group do I fall into? Am I in the second group? Am I in the fourth group? Please give me the vaccine. People have become so fucking fed up and miserable with living like this. Even those who originally found it to be a bit of an adventure and a bit of a holiday, and there were plenty of them willing to be furloughed, all too willing to be furloughed, happy, because a lot of people can't stand their jobs anyway, right? So when this all kicked off last spring, a lot of people, yeah, great, yeah, I'll work from home, or I won't work and I'll be paid. Even those people now are sick of it, and they're begging for the vaccine because they believe, as Tony Blair said, that the vaccine is your path to liberty. The vaccine. And they're buying it. and they're desperate for it. So yes, television and radio stations employ dirty tricks to sway public opinion by sometimes putting 10 callers, seemingly random callers, 10 callers saying that the earth is square and one caller saying that the earth is round. They do it deliberately all the time. In this case, they're not doing it. They don't need to go looking for people to go on the air to say, please give me the vaccine, please give it to me now. That's where we are. You know, I'm expecting, not now, not next week, but sometime in February, as an asthmatic, but a very, very healthy asthmatic who doesn't use medication very often, but I will, I suppose, be on some computer in my surgery, the one that I'm registered with. I will come up on the computer as a guy with an underlying condition that could be vulnerable to a respiratory infection. So somewhere around group 6 or group 7, they'll be phoning me or emailing me or ringing, excuse me, or texting me to say, come and have the vaccine. And I'll be very interested to see at that stage when I very politely, because I am very polite when I deal with these people, because it isn't their fault, be polite, like, I'll be polite. I'll say, listen, no thanks. What I'm interested to know is how persuasive will they try to be? What sort of training will they be given to try and persuade the vaccine sceptics like myself, not anti-vax now, but vaccine sceptics, what sort of persuasion, coercion, tactics will they use? The surgeries. We'll see. I might do a bit of recording. It's not right to record people without telling them they're being recorded. 19 minutes to the top of the hour, 18 minutes in fact. Here's Rod Stewart. Loads of your tweets to read when I come back. Professor Dolores Cahill will be on this programme in around about 20 minutes time, excuse me. The old voice is going. This is Rod Stewart's version of the great Van Morrison song, Have I Told You Lately, on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. Good to be with you.
Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you there's no one else above you? Fill my heart with gladness, take away all my sadness, ease my troubles, that's what you do. For the morning sun and all its glory greets the day with hope and comfort too. That's what you do. There's a love that's divine, and it's yours and it's mine, like the sun. And at the end of the day, we should give thanks and pray to the one. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you there's no one else above you? Fill my heart with gladness, take away all my sadness, ease my troubles, that's what you do. Yeah.
told you lately that I love you? Have I told you there's no one else above you? You fill my heart with gladness, take away my sadness, ease my troubles, that's what you do.
Rod Stewart, yes, he sang that at Manchester, the Manchester Arena. What's wrong with me? It's not that long ago that I was there. Yeah, last year it was. Very, very, very early last year, or late 2018, was it? Was it, sorry, late 2019, it might have been late 2019. Jean Anne tells me, that's my friend and muse and confidant, Jean Anne says, my niece and nephew went for a walk in Connemara National Park yesterday. The diamond. You've got to walk the diamond, you see, if you go to Connemara National Park. It's a very big hill. I don't know this because I've never been to Connemara. I know. People assume that if you're Irish, you must have been everywhere in Ireland. I think I've only been, of the 32 counties, 32! 32! No such place as Londonderry either. If anybody says Londonderry, take out your gloves. Take your gloves out of your back pocket and whip them across the face with your gloves. No such place as Londonderry. Anyway, I go off on tangents. Jean Anne says, niece and nephew, Diamond, Big Hill in Connemara. Beautiful, clear, glorious, pristine, sharp morning yesterday. There was only one other couple on the climb and both of them were wearing masks. Nary another human being within miles. I cannot beat that. I cannot beat that. I'm not going to try. But I go walking around Buell Hill Park sometimes. There are other parks in the area which I frequent as well, and football pitches. And when I'm in Buell Hill Park very early in the morning, I sometimes meet a gentleman, and I know I'm going to give away who he is to somebody. He's a nice gentleman, a very nice gentleman. And he's about 10 years older than I. I would put him in his mid-50s. And he's lovely. He's not in the greatest of shape. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that he's overweight. He's not overweight. Far from it. No. He looks a bit frail and a bit fragile. And he runs every morning. He runs very slowly, but he runs. And he's a bit stiff. And he's always polite, God love him. Ever since I moved to Salford, he'll always make a point of saying hello. He's taken to wearing a face mask on his jogs, on his light jogs around Buell Hill Park. And never being a busybody, I never have been a busybody in my life, I had to say something. The other morning, I had to say it. I had to say, my friend, do you know you might kill yourself if you don't take that feckin' mask off your face? And I asked him, had he read about people getting ill and collapsing when they were cycling and when they were jogging? These were newspaper stories and stuff, wearing a mask. And he said he hadn't. I said, mate, you don't need that feckin' thing. Not when you're running. Your lungs need all the oxygen they can get when you're running. And your heart rate is probably in the late 90s now, is probably 106 because you're out jogging. Take the fucking thing off your face for the love of God. And he said, yeah, I'll give it some thought, but I'm not sure if he did take it off. He went on his merry way. Maybe he thought that big Irish bastard should mind his own business. But increasingly, you are encountering more and more people wearing the masks outside. So the great Dr. Vernon Coleman of vernoncoleman.com, who predicted that mask wearing outdoors would become mandatory before too long, it might not be necessary. Again, when it was announced a couple of days back that the national lockdown number 3 would come into force, when it was announced, you could feel the collective groan. You could feel the nation groan and sigh, and in some cases weep and wail. We can't take any more of it. So now you might find that people will start, I don't know, preempting measures, you know. So sick of it are people, they won't wait for the government and Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance to come out and say, oh, you need now, every second day, you need to spend 20 minutes hopping up and down on one leg. That'll get rid of the virus. There won't be any need for that. People will start doing it in advance. So tired and so fatigued by living like this have they become. And that's why I said earlier on, they're begging for the vaccine. And Fiona Marie Flanagan, who's a great, great Irish lady, who's graced this programme a couple of times, was on just before Christmas. She's hearing this from her friends in the UK. The same thing, that people are saying, where's me bloody vaccine? I want me vaccine. I want it now. Yeah, alrighty. 9 minutes it is to the top of the hour. Professor Dolores Cahill joining the programme in hour two. Not sure where she is, Dolores. She might be in Dublin, she might not be. I know she's been travelling and speaking, although a lot of these speaking occasions are these days, of course, done online like so much. A couple of very interesting things I noticed in the newspapers today. One of them was that in the state of Ohio, did you see this? I tweeted the story today. It was in the Times of London. And the governor of the state of Ohio, I'm not going to try and sound all knowledgeable now. I'm going to look it up, even though I read the story. I read the story today. I've forgotten his bloody name. The governor of the state of Ohio, his name is Mike DeWin or Mike Devine. D-E-W-I-N-E. DeWine or Devine or DeWin. Well, anyway, Mike is the governor of Ohio, and he said that around 60%, 6 out of 10 nursing home staff in Ohio have declined an initial dose of the Pfizer vaccine. We don't want it. Now, typically, the Times of London doesn't give us any more details. Namely, why have 6 out of 10 care home workers said, no thank you. No thanks, please, we're okay, we don't want it. I'd love to know why. Right. And here's another one. In a county east of Los Angeles, they don't mention the county, do they? No, just a county east of LA. Half of those offered a first dose of the vaccine have refused it. Half of them, according to the Los Angeles Times. Presumably they're referring again to care staff who have said no thank you. And I've seen any number of nurses and ex-nurses, particularly ex-nurses, and we've had one or two ex-nurses on the programme, they've been brilliant, saying that their colleagues who are still in nursing, still working in nursing, are saying they don't want the vaccine. Not because they're anti-vaccine, but because they're worried about taking an experimental vaccine that was basically rushed into existence in a matter of months. So that's going to be very interesting, isn't it, as well? And that might explain why in the UK, politicians, not least Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, but politicians across Westminster are calling for legislation to deal with so-called anti-vaxxers. And Keir Starmer, the Labour Party leader, wants to criminalise anti-vaxxers. He wants to criminalise people who go on the internet to make claims about the safety of vaccines. Claims that vaccines are maybe not as safe as we are led to believe. Keir Starmer wants those people dealt with. And I reckon that's because they are very concerned, especially because the Sunday Times, as I mentioned on Monday, the Sunday Times did their own poll, which suggested that 1/4 of adults in this country plan on saying, no thanks, I don't want that vaccine. What will they do then? Or will they wait? They're hardly likely to wait for 1/4 of people to say no to it, right? They're not likely to try and introduce any legislation that would mandate vaccines. They're not likely to do that. So maybe the next step will be to introduce some legislation, to debate it and to pass it, that criminalises speaking negatively about the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine even, the Moderna vaccine and the AstraZeneca vaccine. Don't laugh. It can happen. It's very feasible. If they believe that one out of four adults are going to say no thank you, and they believe that, what might they do in the meantime? Get people to take it. Why are they so desperate for people to take it? Why are they getting the army involved? Why are they announcing that vaccine drive-through centres are going to pop up in supermarkets right across the country? I was reading in the papers yesterday, I think it was, in the Manchester Evening News, that Morrison's across the country has said, use our car parks. The army can come in and people can drive through. You've seen those images on television coming out of Israel. Israel, their vaccine programme, their vaccination programme has proven to be very successful. They're getting people to drive through, get the jab, a little bit of cotton wool, a little bit of a plaster, a lollipop, kick in the arse, fuck off, you've had the vaccine, and they're just driving through. Crazy. Let's have some more music. That will take us to the top of the hour. Dolores Cahill will be on the programme. Piers Corbyn was due to be on the programme with me today. I have a lot of time for Piers Corbyn, a lot of time for the man. He's graced this programme on many an occasion. But he's left me down more than once. And I said to him today, because he left me down yesterday, I know he wasn't entirely well yesterday, but he also wasn't in his office. He was in transit. And he's done this to me before. And I said to him today, be on time. He said, no problem. I gave him a 25-minute warning. No problem. He said, I'm there. And then he's not there. I don't have any time for that. I'm the chief cook and bottle washer here. No producer, no editor. There's just me. And I hate car crash radio. I hate it. Move on. It's not going to happen. Move on. We might have Piers Corbyn back in the near future, or he might get the hump and he might never be back on again. Either way, it's fine by me. The BBG, not the BBC. Here's Bob Seger. We'll get news headlines in a couple of minutes' time, and then we'll have Dolores Cahill live on the programme, answering some very important questions for you.
A gypsy wind is blowing warm tonight. The sky is starlit and the time is right. And still you're telling me you have to go. Before you leave, there's something you should know. Yeah, something you should know, babe. Smiling in the summer sun, I've seen your long hair flying when you run. I've made my mind up that it's meant to be. Someday, lady, you'll accompany me. Someday, lady, you'll accompany me. I'll wear the rivers meet the sound and sea.
Right, Bob Seger on the Richie Allen Radio Show. You'll accompany me from Against the Wind album. Yeah, that's right. If I didn't know that, I should be shot dead. Shot and buried in a shallow grave. Let's hear... let's get headlines from FSN. Dolores Cahill has checked in. She's ready and waiting. You don't want to miss her. Headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Election officials in the U.S. state of Georgia say the Democrats' lead in two Senate races is only now expected to grow as the final votes are counted. Thousands of President Trump supporters are taking to the streets of Washington, urging Congress to block Joe Biden's presidential election win. And the European Union has given the Moderna vaccine the green light for use throughout the bloc.
Did you think the European Union wouldn't give it the green light, eh? Yeah, I didn't think so. Coming up for 2 minutes past six, it is then, according to my clock anyway, the atomic clock here in the studio, it is Wednesday's programme. Don't forget Mark Bajerski, markbajerski.com, will be on the programme tomorrow. Very interesting stuff going on. I'll tell you more about that before the program is over today. Alrighty.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Good to be with you. Thanks for the tweet there. William sent me a tweet about a story that was in the New York Times, which I didn't see. I don't know why I didn't see that, William. I do check the New York Times fairly regularly. But it was a story about a man being arrested in Wisconsin. A pharmacist was arrested in Wisconsin because he tampered, well, he or she, it doesn't say whether it's he or she, tampered with the Moderna vaccine, sabotaging it because the pharmacist believed the vaccine would harm people. A pharmacist believing that a vaccine would harm people sabotaged, tampered with it in order to sabotage it, believing it was the right thing to do to keep people safe. That's according to police in Wisconsin, that story in the New York Times. But I don't know exactly when that story was published in the New York Times. I'll get on to it, though. It's very interesting. Shall we welcome back to the programme then Professor Dolores Cahill? She is a professor of translational science at University College Dublin. With an impeccable academic record there, came to our attention early last year at the outset of all of this. At that time, she had to resign from a commission post because of her stance on lockdown. I'm glad that she's around. I'm glad that somebody of her standing in the scientific community has spoken out so often and for so long on this issue. Let's welcome her back to the programme, Professor Dolores Cahill. Dolores, it's lovely to speak with you again. How are you?
I'm very, very delighted to speak with you, Richie, and Happy New Year to you and everybody listening in.
And to you and yours as well, Dolores. It wasn't that long before Christmas that we spoke. It seems that things, right? It seems that things have escalated considerably since then. We've gone back into a national lockdown here. It's the same in Ireland. We've got former prime ministers going public today with many others saying that the vaccine in the future is going to be our path to liberty. And I do, of course, want to hear your thoughts on the mRNA vaccine and why you're concerned about it and what your concerns are. But things have escalated considerably in the last few weeks, haven't they?
Yes, I think they have. But I suppose maybe we needed it to get this way for the vast majority of people to join the dots and figure out that, you know, if police are saying to people they have to be locked in their homes, for something that was the year, you know, 2 years ago flu now, which there are prevention and treatments. Maybe this is what it will take for, you know, parents and people with grandparents and children wearing masks to actually take a good hard look about what the politicians are saying, what is how this has been represented with untruths on the, you know, mainstream media. And there are studies now showing how hugely detrimental masks are to children. Maybe this is what it will take for people to do a bit of critical thinking and analysis of what's really going on.
I hope you're right. And I'm not going to be a doom monger at all. But I do want to say this. My experience here is that so fed up, Dolores, of living like this, people have become, maybe early on it was a novelty for people, it was okay, there was the furlough money. A lot of people don't like their jobs, even if they're well-paying jobs, a lot of people are not happy. Initially people were okay, and it was a holiday, but they've become very, very, very depressed. And I know I'm not, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak about my community. And in my community, I promise you, Dolores, they're begging for the vaccine.
I suppose what is our job in a way is to try to maybe reframe the discussion, right? And that's why I'm so grateful to be on your show, Richie, is that people have these inalienable rights, you know, to take care of their family, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly and bodily integrity. And I suppose in the bigger picture, you know, 70% of jobs and taxes are coming from small businesses and farming community. And what the government has been doing is paying people, but borrowing from the future funds that will fund future healthcare and education and society. And it is entirely societally and economically unsustainable to decimate, you know, restaurants, hotels and small businesses. So what we need to do to say to people is, there will not be this so-called furlough money, right? And if what will happen is potentially hyperinflation, or there will be trying to force people into universal social income, and whether they get a vaccine or not, in this globalist worldview, nothing is going to change. So now they may be saying, if you get the vaccine, you can work. But, you know, people like me and many people would have known exactly how this plays out from 20 years ago. And there is no, in their worldview, returning that people have rights of freedom of speech, assembly, bodily integrity, and to return to work. So, you know, people will be disappointed even after they get the vaccine. The narrative, unfortunately, will change. And so, you know, what we need to tell people is this is a virus that was now, you know, 2019, a year and a half ago or a year ago. You can prevent and treat every single person naturally. And that the vaccine will cause significantly more harm than good.
We're going to come on to that in a moment now, why you believe that to be the case. Professor Dolores Cahill is our guest. One thing that cheeses me off, Dolores, as a student of people like Simon Bolivar and Salvador Allende and Hugo Chavez, it really cheeses me off that some label this as some sort of socialist agenda. There's nothing socialist, or at least there's nothing real socialism about this agenda to lock people into their homes, to tell them they have to take a vaccine they don't want, to tell them they must carry a passport around declaring them to be free of bugs and viruses. That's not socialism, at least not the socialism that I experienced growing up in the trade union movement.
So that's a good way to frame it, I think. But I suppose what people really, what is going on now and has been going on for many years is really, and I would say that a way to measure how societies are, which, you know, the framers of all of the constitutions, including the American one, that our societies are based on freedom of speech. And freedom of speech, really, if you want to think freely, you have to have freedom of speech. You have to have open debate, and you have to associate with people to, you know, formulate your thoughts, and you have to have the freedom of assembly, right? And then you have bodily integrity. You cannot be forced into anything. You have freedom of travel, and the family is the primary cornerstone of society that would look after family members, the elderly and children. Okay, so really what's going on now is really the proper way to frame it is between freedom and coercion or freedom and tyranny. And so really the labels of so-called, as many of us who've been watching this for 20, 30 years, of left, right, and liberal and conservative, none of those actually match what has been going on.
They don't matter.
You know, what we, our freedom of speech has been curtailed and freedom to openly debate and challenge people, even within the universities, on the media and politicians, right? So really what it is a framing of freedom versus coercion or freedom versus tyranny. And what I would say to people is, how do you know you're, if you are in a society where there is tyranny? It's that, you know, if the police are telling you, forcing you to do things against your will, or teachers or government, such as putting masks on children, which is entirely harming them, or forcing people to not be able to meet their family members, such as their grandparents, or, you know, women not being able to hug their children after giving birth. So I think what we really have transitioned in is to coercion in the state, including in Ireland and in the United Kingdom. And really, it's freedom versus tyranny. But, you know, I've been traveling. I'm very proud to have been involved in as president of the World Doctors Alliance with Dr. Muhammad Adil and Dr. Zach Cox, and also now president of the World Freedom Alliance. And I've been traveling all over Europe where I have never worn a mask. I've said no to PCR testing. I've never filled in a passenger locator form, and I will never take a vaccine. And for the people who are listening to your show, is that all you have to do, in inverted commas, is say no, right? And then you force the, you know, the politicians or the principals or the police to actually think on what legal basis, on what lawful basis are they forcing you to do something, which is a crime, right? Normally, if you're coerced into doing something you don't want to do without your consent. And at every stage, even though I've been surrounded by police many times in the last, you know, 9 months or so, they have never forced me to fill in a passenger locator form, or obviously I have never worn a mask, is because it's unlawful. So I think we need to give people courage, and why we have set up the World Freedom Alliance. We are just networking the top lawyers in the world. And we are not we, but we are highlighting that, we'll say, in Austria, there was a constitutional case that was won a week ago, and every aspect of the lockdown in Austria has been overturned.
Every aspect.
You know, so because it's unlawful what's going on, and the police need to be held to account, and the politicians, and only really we need 1 in 100 brave people to stand up and to say no.
It was the I'm thrilled to hear that, and I do recommend people check out the World Freedom Alliance. Check it out. Listen to
worldfreedomalliance.org. Yeah.
.org. That's the website. And do check out
the website.
Do check out interviews with Dolores Cahill. If you put Dolores, professor, even Dolores Cahill, into Brand New Tube or even into YouTube, you'll find interviews with her there. And also Muhammad Adil, who was on this program several months ago as well. He's been on with me a few times.
And maybe DoloresCahill.com as well, is if you go to the video section. And there was a brilliant documentary done by Luke Alexander, who's a very young student, which is also there, you know, which is highlighting the issues of the vaccine.
That gives you great hope, doesn't it? When younger students.
And I suppose I would love as well, Richie, I've just set up an airline, Freedom Airway. So if they want to look up freedomairway.com, so we are, I am, you know, going to have flights to promote the people, to allow them to travel without vaccines, without PCR, without track and tracing, without masks, if they don't want to wear them. And initially, we will be flying from countries where the lockdown has been overturned or is not enforced. And the first flights will be from Europe to Florida. And hopefully return. And on the return flight, we may even try and book flights. And I will take high court injunctions against countries for unlawfully requiring people to fill in passenger locator forms. For example, in Ireland, where when the police have detained me, I have said I will take, you know, not pay the fine, go to prison and take high court cases and potentially Supreme Court cases, because we have, you know, intrinsically highly enshrined inalienable rights to travel and for the family to meet, and all over the world families can go back to their home countries. So really, what is going on? That we just have to put it up to the globalists, right? They are trying to, we're paying our taxes, most people are good, you know, people who live in our countries, and we are funding through our taxes the states to intimidate and coerce us to put, to say your children can only go to school if you put masks on them, which has been shown by many studies now to cause huge increase in illness of children and anxiety and potentially suicidal thoughts, right? So we're just, you know, as I've said in some of my speeches, enough is enough. And it's up to each of us to, you know, support each other. And if people can't, you know, they're very welcome to go on to Freedom Airways and become a member of Freedom Airways and support us, right? And then they can, we won't have the flights maybe for a few weeks or so, January, February, but we would be hoping that people will fly Freedom Airways to push
this
back.
Is, an
because what we have really is parallel societies, you know, a society of tyranny.
Yeah.
And maybe at the minute we're only 5% who, you know, recognize they want to live free and not be coerced. And we just need to then, through the free market, provide a whole parallel world where you have hotels that do not coerce you into temperature track and tracing, and airways and a whole tourist industry. So there are countries like Brazil, Tanzania, Austria, you know, and where none of this has been implemented. And Bosnia, or sorry, Belarus.
Belarus, yeah? Right.
So
okay.
That initially we can push the 1 in 10 people towards the country and the tourist industry and business, and then extend it from there on one flight at a time, one court case at a time.
This is a brilliant and very innovative and unique idea. I've often wondered, I mean, I lived in Spain for many, many years, a country which is incredibly dependent on tourism. And you know, I prayed last year, living amongst the Spanish, I never learned the language, I didn't, but my partner did, she became fluent in it. And we had a lot of Spanish friends and neighbours. And the Spanish never took too kindly to authoritarianism or to fascism. And I kind of prayed last year, Dolores, with the impact this would have on businesses in Spain, that they would there would be some sort of uprising against it. And listening to you now, you know, it makes perfect sense to do deals with tourist resorts and countries to say, listen, enough of this nonsense now. Don't treat us like animals and like laboratory experiments, and we'll come and spend time in your country on our holidays. I'm absolutely fascinated by this.
Yeah.
Brilliant
so the thing
stuff,
is,
yeah.
I mean, I'm in touch and very honoured to be in touch, you know, through intermediaries with the Brazilian government, right?
Yeah.
And so, as you know, the other two, well, I have a number of initiatives, but another one is to set up an autopsy service, right? Because part of the issue why the lockdown is being maintained is that, you know, on the 19th of March in Public Health England and on the government website in the UK, they said that COVID-19 was not highly infectious, right, which it isn't. And the chance when the pandemic was called of dying from it was 1 in 1.8 million all over the world. OK, so therefore autopsies could be performed. But in, you know, I've been involved in trying to get countries to take autopsies of people who have died, including in interactions with the hospitals, and the coroners and the police, even though they're reported as a suspicious death, autopsies have not been performed, and we've had to fly pathologists, you know, to countries to do them, to investigate. And so the reason why this is important is that I know we'll talk about the vaccine, but you can actually distinguish death from an adverse event from a vaccine entirely and easily, you know, and forensically as evidence in court cases from viral infections or from people that die, obviously, from terminal diseases, right, like cancer.
Yeah.
So what I am saying there is a need is because all of these pathologists now in the world are unemployed, right? There are no autopsies. We spent 12 days in the world. We couldn't get one pathologist to do an autopsy, right? I had phone calls all over the world. But in this system, if you are interacting with the healthcare system or potentially getting a vaccine, especially if it is required you are a healthcare worker or a police, that you could prepay an autopsy, right? I know it sounds gruesome, But then the doctor or anybody giving it to you, you can say, oh, by the way, just so you know, if anything happens to me, I've already prepaid an autopsy. And of course, in Ireland and in the UK, the family can take a medical negligence case. If someone, their bodily integrity is infringed and they are not given full informed consent. Okay, and this is a way that no matter what tricks the government are playing, potentially indemnifying the manufacturers of these interventions in the healthcare system, that the families can take cases against the person that does the injection in the event of an adverse event or death. And this is the way I have come up with to hold people to account. And there are very good solicitors and barristers. And I'm in the World Freedom Alliance. We have a legal pillar. And we will then be potentially asking for, as you know, many, you know, healthcare workers have died and people who have forced to take the vaccine. So an autopsy service is a way to push back on the vaccine.
That's very interesting now about healthcare workers. We'll come back to that in a moment, because in Ohio, 60% of care home workers surveyed said they wouldn't take the vaccine. It was more than half in a county of Los Angeles. I think there is an awareness in healthcare at various levels in certain parts of the United States that some people have had some very serious reactions to these vaccines. But I want to take you back to something you said earlier on. You mentioned Austria earlier on. Now, I read the Times every day for my sins. I read all the broadsheets. I'm sure you do as well. And I was reading in the Times yesterday.
No, I don't actually. Now, in general, I used to, right? And I used to buy a lot of economists. But no, I focus. I don't actually. No.
Yeah, I don't. It's not going to do you any harm.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Because I think the thing is, you know, I do my own fact checking. And I think it's not good for the psyche and soul to be reading too much. Obviously, you have to. This is your.
Yeah, it's my gig. Yeah, it's my gig. But listen, what I wanted to say was in yesterday's, I'm sure it was yesterday's Times, it's reported that the Austrian government extended the lockdown there until the last week in January, I think. Now, you said to me a short while ago that the Austrian authorities are going to do away with lockdown. This is not a gotcha moment at all. I mean, you might be right, but the Times said, as far as it's concerned, lockdown there, essential business is closed, tourism virtually impossible there, is going to go on till the third week of this month.
Yeah, so I suppose that's a very good. So as well as that, we'll say I just got information this morning that a lawyer in the Netherlands won, you know, within 2 days, like between the 1st and 2nd of January, a precedence case that his family were returning from Tanzania and they didn't want to take a PCR test. He won the precedence court case that the family did not need to, because everybody has a right to go back to their home country.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think yesterday the Netherlands, you know, are bringing in another statute or act, right, to try and overturn that. So I think it's the same as what they're doing in Austria, right? This is really a battle, you know, it's a media battle. It's a battle between our inalienable rights and what the politicians are playing at on pieces of paper in Parliament. OK, and so just to tell you what the politicians are doing all over the world is bringing in, you know, acts or statutes or guidelines or regulations. OK, but something is only lawful. That's the difference between legal and lawful. And lawful is that if it has been challenged in the courts and in the higher courts to be consistent with our inalienable rights, which there's a hierarchy, right, of freedom and rights and the inalienable ones. And the reason why it's important is that inalienable rights cannot be taken away by any government anywhere, right? So we have freedom of speech, freedom of travel, bodily integrity. So what they try and do is keep issuing pieces of paper, right? And essentially all of the politicians are not acting in the countries because the governments are there to protect our rights, okay? And what the globalists are doing, and in a way, in their worldview, it's a win-win, right? Because what they need to do is to cause fear in society, intimidate and coerce. Okay, so they are using the taxes that we all pay if you work to, you know, for the legal system, for the political system, for the state broadcasters, for the education system and healthcare. and they have a duty, and we trust them, right? There is a bond of trust, and they are breaching that every day because they are bringing in on paper, whether it's an act or a statute or a guideline, that infringes our fundamental rights of the family, freedom of travel, bodily integrity. But actually the role of governments are to protect our freedoms. That's their primary role. So why the globalists, it's a win-win for them, because for them to succeed, they have to undermine every fabric of society, right? Including the education system, the healthcare system, the courts and the police. And not only undermine it in a big way, but, you know, in a kind of a fabric way, but also within each pillar of society to cause psychological division, which they are doing very well, within families, and to reduce the bond between individual people and their police so that you are afraid when you see the police, right? So what they're doing then back to these court cases is they are actually not respecting the court rulings. We'll say, like in the Netherlands on the 2nd of January, by the 3rd or 4th of January, they bring in the same unlawful act again, so that another person will have to take a case, you know, to say, so every family, and that requires a lot of money. And what they try to do is to undermine, because I would never take a PCR test as well, because there is no reason why they have to take those PCR tests up in your nose the way they are doing, and I would have huge issue with it. So what the globalists are doing is not recognizing precedents, court decisions, and the politicians are, you know, have a bond, a duty of trust, and they are also undermining that by exactly what you're saying. Austria is coming out going, oh, we're just going to reissue another act.
Yeah.
So what they're implying is you just changed the date of the act. Say if it was November 2020, you would entirely ignore the precedent constitutional court case and you just put the act through, right? So, but the reason why we need to educate people and tell them is that what the politicians are doing is actually unlawful, right? And potentially it is malfeasance, right? Because they know that what the people have all of these inalienable rights and they are ignoring it. And really, it's almost a crimes of treason, right? They are undermining, because when you realize the role of governments is to defend our freedoms, okay, and that we have every arm really of the administrative role of government undermining our freedoms, they are then reducing the bond, because people will then say, well, why am I paying my taxes for police to actually, as we saw in Berlin with us, to just when you're walking on the street on your own, that like people come and just push you to the ground, right? So that's the police engaging in criminal behavior, which is not what they are, you know, signed up to do. But for the globalists who are trying to undermine society so that people will be confused and afraid, and then they make people psychologically afraid and not tell them the truth and change the rules every day to undermine their, you know, core, you know, they are unsettled and they see the police doing unlawful behavior, that undermines the whole fabric of society, and it's a vicious circle of fear. So, but all you need is 1 in 100 people to just say no. And we are very lucky in the World Doctors Alliance, the World Freedom Alliance, we have, you know, probably connected to 500,000 people around the world who are taking court cases, and doctors who are standing up. And teachers and parents, you know, and the elderly.
And so that's no small beer, though.
I think we've won already, you know.
I think you've done incredibly well. That's an enormous number. Professor Dolores Cahill is our guest. Let me just read a couple of quick tweets and then I want to move on to the vaccine. We're going to go with Dolores' permission to 5 to 7. Okay, we've obviously finished
Perfect,
at 7 o'clock.
Of course. And that's going to give you... Can I just say, I think 87,000 nurses in the Netherlands before Christmas said they wouldn't take the vaccine. So 87,000 nurses
we're hearing
in the Netherlands.
That's amazing. And we're hearing it from around the world. We've put a link out to freedomairway.com. Now, Faisal says...
Brilliant.
Very quickly, Faisal says basically what's happened in Austria basically he's endorsing what you've said. Even though the lockdown measures are not legally enforceable, the government is still declaring it and the media is backing it in the hope most of the population will still follow. Patricia says, Professor Dolores Cahill has shown so much courage fighting the lies about this virus, all of the nonsense being forced on all of us and the vaccines that are allegedly needed against it, regardless of the price she might have to pay. She's a warrior for truth, says Patricia in Zurich. They're a very good friend of ours. Very nice thing to say, and I endorse that as well. Before you talk to me about the mRNA vaccine and why you're worried about it, and I'm not going to interrupt you, I want you to talk. I mean, I can't argue with you. I can't speak to you about it because I'm not a scientist, and
no,
I know nothing about it.
I
can't.
Wrong,
I'd love to. I'd love to, but I know nothing about it, Dolores. I know nothing about it. Before we do
That's
that,
right.
though, on what you said there, I thought what you just said there was brilliant, and it reminds me. Even when I was broadcasting back in 2014 in London, and even going back to 2010 in Spain, we were talking then to very nice men and women in legal circles in the UK who were concerned about the constant attacks on the free legal aid budget and how legal aid money that's always supposed to be there so that folks who don't have the means can get access to proper representation. That's been attacked for years and years and years and years. And I wonder if these times, if that was meant to be the case. Now, let's talk about the...
Well, and maybe can I just say, Richie, that really when you look at it probably for 20, 30 years, the education system and the healthcare system and the access to justice, the media and the political system, basically every arm of our society has been undermined, but also the education associated with it and with the police has been undermined. And in many cases, people have been taught things that are not true. So what is just very quickly around the world, a lot of people will say, like, I knew what was being taught in the healthcare system was incorrect, right? As did many people.
Yeah.
But what is amazing is there are tens of thousands of people that are actually looking at how the world is organized, including from fundamental aspects like banking and debt and business and access to justice, but also how our nations are set up on a legal and constitutional basis. And also, for example, structures like the United Nations, you know. Now, I would have looked into law and natural law, Brehon law, international law, even though I'm not a lawyer, right, for 25 years. And what a lot of us, and as people with background in law and retired judges, that actually it's actually very easy to knock down the whole globalist system, right? Because a lot of their system is actually built on unlawful behavior and unlawful courts. And the fabric of the banking debt, as you know, in Switzerland, we had Catherine Austin Fitz and a lot of the world for investment bankers and world leaders were there, including people coming in on Zoom, right? Like Professor Richard Werner, that actually the, you know, this so-called debt-ridden society we have and the way the banks generate, you know, fictitious money and the way the states are just, you know, hugely indebted. That actually there are now tens of thousands of people over the world. We're all connected. They were connected independent of the World Freedom Alliance, but they're all really connected now. And that actually I coined a phrase, I think, in Copenhagen, the Great Resist, that the actual new world, we can actually jettison a lot of the globalist banking system and a lot of the debt that the states have and potentially, you know, the very fabric of the United Nations. So what I would see the World Freedom Alliance is like an alternative to the United Nations. And we can have a health regulatory body, which would mean that doctors and healthcare professionals would be registered in a system that would be based at not where the World Health Organization is, in other countries. They would be registered in an international legal system where people would interact under notice of liability, that the doctor had to give them full informed consent. And that we can actually jettison this whole globalist system very quickly. And so in the free market, right, so that people, even if we're only 5% of the world population, a bit like the airway, that you can actually move out of the current banking system and potentially the tax system. So in the World Freedom Alliance, we have said that we are supporting creation of real money. And you could just have an alternative system like the Tobin tax. where you just spend 2% of your income, which is enough to fund countries, you know, and include healthcare system and education. So I think the globalists have pushed it too far, and that we are all connected now. So even if they do, you know, something like shut off the internet, that everybody now, this information has disseminated around the world. And in the free market system, initially, we might only be 5% of the world population, but the people that are already connected are the innovators and the people that create jobs. And I tell you, we are not going to sit at home for the next 10 years and be forcibly vaccinated. And that we already know how we can have a beautiful world system, whether it's from the real democracy, the banking system, a new real healthcare system where children are not chronically ill, you know, where they're actually healthy, and an education system where people are, you know, given the entrepreneurial spirit, challenging their history and their education, and actually are instilled with the values of freedom and respect for our culture. And that they are allowed to have open debate and be innovative for every aspect of the education system. So what I'm saying to people is the fact that I get calls now, as we all do in the World Freedom Alliance, we've connected everybody in the world on every continent, and we're already building the new world.
Brilliant stuff. The creation of money out of thin air by banks, of course, for my money is the, no pun intended, the foundation upon which the entire conspiracy is based. I've gotten into that so many times in the last 10, 15 years on programs like this. Talk to me. We've got 20 minutes left on this program. You've given many a lecture, Professor Dolores Cahill, so you're a good timekeeper. Talk to me in that time. Why are you... I know you're not telling people what to do, and I really respect that. Why will you, as a human being first and foremost, and as Professor Dolores Cahill secondly, why would you not take the mRNA vaccine? What concerns you about it?
Okay, I'll try and do it really quickly, Richie, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, it's not necessary, okay? So that if you have an illness like influenza, back when people had it January, February, if people were aware every winter you can take combinations of good food, nutrition, vitamins D, C and zinc, right? Or and or things like prevention and treatments, hydroxychloroquine and zinc, ivermectin, inhale steroids, then people can, like, hydroxychloroquine works within 8 hours. So therefore, on the day or the week or just in the few weeks before, you can prevent getting the symptoms of influenza-like illness. And they are some of the safest treatments in the world and prevention. Not one person need die. Okay. So therefore, you have to ask in any medical intervention, and even from a financial commercial thing for the politicians, right, under commercial misrepresentation or fraud, we do not need to spend one penny on these PCR tests or vaccines, because this is an illness that happens last year in the flu season, 2019-2020. And it can be treated on the spot. Not one person needs to die. Okay, therefore, it's not necessary. Okay, number one. Number two, these are not vaccines in the definition of the world of the word. It turns out that messenger RNA, right, it's actually either should be classified, it should not be classified as a vaccine. It should be classified as a prevention. You know, and then it should be compared with other preventions like hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or vitamin D, or it actually is a gene therapy. Okay, this is not, under the definition, is not a vaccine. Now, the main reason why I am not going to take it, I would not be recommending it for my family, is that in the last 40, 50 years, when they have tried to make vaccines against coronaviruses and the common cold, there was a common cold institute in the UK for 40 years. It closed down. Not one vaccine was licensed. There is not one vaccine licensed before this on the American vaccine schedule. And the reason is that when they gave the RNA vaccines to the animals, that either all of the animals had severe adverse events and or death, or all of the animals died. So why? And so when they called the pandemic on the 11th of March, 2020, the chances of dying then, it was 56 people in the whole world were dying every day in the height of this thing, 56 people. So you had a chance of one in 1.8 million. So in a population of Ireland, it would have been three people in the flu season would have died, right? So would you take a, you know, so-called solution that could potentially harm out of a million people or 800,000 people for a illness that might have killed not even one in a million people, for which there is some of the safest prevention and Nobel Prize winning treatments? You know, it's a harm benefit analysis. And then very quickly, how the RNA kills. So it's basically there's a kill switch in this gene therapy. Okay, so this RNA turns people into genetically modified organisms as well, because the RNA from the virus goes into your body. And when I heard that they were doing these RNA vaccines or so-called vaccines, I looked up in the EU to say if they had reduced the requirement for genetically modified organisms, and indeed they had on the 17th of July 2020. But how the kill switch works in this RNA prevention or therapy is that the RNA goes into the human body as a messenger RNA, and the human body, because that's how we produce human proteins, is with our messenger RNA. It uses the machinery in the cells of the body to make the protein of the virus. And that protein is then in our human cells. And when those cells die, that protein, the virus protein, comes in contact with our human immune system. And the immune system sees, oh my God, there's a viral protein there. And they ramp up the T cell and the antibody side of the immune system to get rid of the virus protein, which should normally be there, because normally the viruses come in on your nose, and in 99 out of 100 people, the immune system in your mucosa and in your nose is enough to get rid of it. So you have an initial immune reaction when you get injected with the RNA that bypasses by the injection all of your intrinsic immune system. But then the kill switch for this RNA is that then when coronaviruses circulate, it could be in February, March of 2021, or it could be the following year, or you could in contact with the common cold virus, the immune system recognizes the coronavirus, the next year's one in 2021 or 22, on your nose, in your mucosa, it may get into your body, it ramps up to get rid of the virus. So the kill switch then is that normally the immune system ramps down again after a few days once you're well again. But how it kills people is that the immune system suddenly realizes that, oh my God, this protein is now in my cells. So it could be in your spleen cell, it could be in your lung cells, it could be in your heart. And so the immune system starts to get rid of the viral protein in the human organ. And then suddenly it sees this protein everywhere in all the organs. It starts to ramp up and the immune system tries to get rid of the viral protein in each cell. And it's just is a positive feedback loop. It then attacks your organs. So for the person, they will then become sick, depending on how old they are and run down, maybe after 5 or 6 days. And then because their immune system is attacking their organs, they go into organ failure, which we may, you know, have called like sepsis. So you go from being healthy to being very sick. And then you go into organ failure where you can no longer breathe, or your liver doesn't work, or your kidneys doesn't work. And then you die within, you know, a week or 2 weeks of organ failure or sepsis. And that will happen to the majority of people. And I would say, you know, everybody over 70. So what they are doing is pre-priming people for the last number of months and years with various coronaviruses, like the influenza. Some of the influenza vaccines in 2018, 2019 were switched to dog kidney tissue, which are known to have coronaviruses. And some of the huge deaths that happened in Bergamo in Italy were because they had been pre-primed with influenza vaccine and meningococcus and pneumonococcus vaccine, and then the coronavirus hit. So what I was saying all along is people should be looking and saying, why were there deaths in Italy and nowhere else? And if you look at it, they were pre-primed with this vaccine or RNA killer switch. So this is well known, right? All the animals died. And for example, in the UK, under the pretext of a highly infectious virus, which coronavirus is not, the regulators said we will skip all of the animal studies for these so-called coronaviruses or corona gene therapy or corona prevention and treatment, so which is totally not correct. So that obviously all of the animals wouldn't die. So they are essentially doing the studies in humans. And so what people are seeing now, the first one the CDC produced was that 2 out of 100 people had serious adverse events just from the anaphylaxis from the initial vaccine. These vaccines should not ever be given in a double dose. So that the prediction is if people get the second vaccine, they will obviously have a much more acute response in an anaphylaxis allergic reaction to the vaccine. So it's seen from the literature, maybe 1 in 10 people will have an anaphylaxis type shock. And as we know, some of the nurses and healthcare workers and the elderly are dying within hours as an anaphylaxis. So that could be 1 in 10 people.
But we
the
don't
CDC
know.
Have said that in the first one, 1 in 50. And then it is mainly months later that this RNA kill switch will come along, and that could kill up to 80% of the people who get the vaccine. So the combination is very serious, and that's why they are pushing back. And also, I had said all of this in my interviews on the 11th of May and the 20th of May, 2020. Yeah. And just to finish off, Richie, the names, there were multiple names for this, the kill switch that I'm talking about. And it's called antibody dependent enhancement, ADE. It's called cytokine storm, and it's called viral interference. But all of it ends up, and that's why I'm saying we need an autopsy service, because the people who die will say, if you're elderly 80-year-old, you know, grandparent is dying in a care home, a pathologist and an autopsy can distinguish that this is viral interference, because the organ failure of those people who sadly die would be very different from a pneumonia or from a virus. And why it's not really my job to be setting up autopsy services around the world,
yeah,
but it means that we can distinguish the deaths associated with the combination. So it could be a combination of influenza vaccines and the two corona vaccines, and that would result in the deaths of huge numbers of people. But we can then, an autopsy service will provide the forensic evidence for
clarity.
Court cases.
Let
and
me,
the reason for that is then to prevent it happening in the future for other elderly.
To give other people that knowledge. What you've said there, and I obviously have watched over the months, I've watched other interviews, and I'm a lay man or a lay person, but I'm also an experienced journalist and researcher. So I've been able to determine what it is that you've said. And I know that the claims you've just made to me have been endorsed by other qualified academics such as yourself. So I know it's been peer reviewed of sorts. I had a journalist from the United States.
Yeah, and I have produced, lots of publications as well. So from lots of labs around the world.
That's what I was coming to. Now, what I want to
for the animals that died.
For the animals
that died.
Can I just sum this up? Can I sum this up as I understand it? I understand what you said to me that I'm going to say could. It could happen. That if you were to take one or both of these mRNA vaccines, that it essentially, in the future, might act as some sort of time bomb in your immune system. And that 6, 8, 10, 12 months down the road, when there's a mutation of coronavirus, because there's lots of, we've known about coronavirus for years and years.
No, it's not a mutation. It's the next circulating
coronavirus that happens
every year.
Right, that happens, yeah. Exactly, because we know there are lots of coronaviruses and they come around every year. Exactly, I should have been clear. You get those vaccines and then a year or two down the line, a coronavirus could attempt to enter your system and your body could conceivably begin to attack itself, your immune system could begin to attack its organs, its kidneys, depending on where it is, making essentially the receiving the coronavirus vaccine is basically injecting a time bomb into your immune system. That's what you think it is.
Yeah, and because it's an area of immunology called antibody-dependent enhancement, right? And the enhancement in all of this as a field of immunology is that the actual exposure to the RNA or mRNA enhances the immune response and literally makes you more sick. So over, like, you know, all of the studies, you know, even 10 years ago, 15 years ago and since have said that getting mRNA this way, you know, as a therapy or whatever you want to call it, a vaccine, will make you more sick. So it enhances, not in a good way. So you will be more sick. But I think why people need to make the connection, and what I was saying back in May, is that people will not die of influenza symptoms, right? They will die of organ failure. And why I came out in May was the Irish government wanted to make it much worse by giving people this influenza vaccine potentially made on dog tissue with coronavirus, that this would be the opposite way. The natural exposure to the coronavirus last year would have stimulated the immune system. And then you inject a vaccine with more coronavirus and you stimulate the immune system again. So this is a field of immunology where essentially the mRNA makes you more sick. But why the elderly die, like people over 65 or 70, is that ramping up the immune system costs a lot of energy. And if you already are elderly, your immune system is a little bit weaker. And if you have underlying conditions, you will then die very quickly. And so what is going on by not allowing family members into the care homes under the false pretext that the 2019 coronavirus, you know, is an issue that families can't see the treatment of their elderly, and people cannot go to funerals and there can be no autopsies, is just a way of covering up what is going on, right? So I've been saying since last year, take off the coronavirus glasses. This is totally a preventable disease. It's been finished in the Northern Hemisphere since the end of April. No one is dying of SARS-CoV-2. And therefore, have a good look at what's going on in the care homes and the elderly and with the police and with the politicians. And what it's doing is covering up the elderly getting these dangerous treatments, gene therapy. It's totally unnecessary. And then their families can't go and see them. And that, unfortunately, the healthcare workers and the care systems, in their core and in their consciousness, they know what's going on is wrong, right? But they haven't spoken out. So they're almost complicit in it psychologically, because they are going to find it hard now to speak out. And there is a lot of cover up. The way we spent 12 days, we couldn't find one pathologist in the world that would do the autopsy of this elderly person, you know? And so there is a component of the globalist interfering with the natural, the way families would look after their elderly. And so what I've been speaking out since May is there is going to be a huge number of deaths.
They won't be able to cover that up, Dolores.
There won't be any autopsies. The funerals will be small.
Now, this is we've only got about 3 minutes left today. Thanks for coming back. If you're right, and I'm not here to endorse what you've said, because I can't. My job is to platform you and allow you to speak.
No, I'll take responsibility. Of course. If I'm wrong, I'll come back.
Well, of course you would. What I'm going to say is, if you are right, if your theory is right, and again, I want to say, I've had Andy Wakefield on this program in the past, spoke to him about that. I spoke to Sucharit Bhakti on this program, and he didn't go into as much detail as you, but Sucharit Bhakti said that there's no way he would take this vaccine, and the vaccine would be the last thing that anybody should have or would need. So he obviously agrees with you. Final question.
And I wouldn't take it either.
No, final question for you today. If you are right, we will, inevitably, a lot of people are going to die, far more people than became sick from the swine flu vaccine. I don't care how good the media is at covering things up. They'll never be able to cover this up. Final question. Surely they can't cover it up in the long
run.
Well,
I suppose that's why they're trying to do draconian measures to prevent people at funerals and things, you know. But I think the other thing is that the other solution to this is a biorepository, right? So I already put a call out that we need to be taking, you know, random vials, like 1 in 100 of this gene therapy RNA treatment, right? And of the PCR test, because it's well known, because the adverse events are so high from the true mRNA gene therapy, is that they probably will have placebo of just PBS, right, to cover it up, you know, that so that there will be less. And that's what I've been told is the strategy. So what we need to do is to have random tests to check, because obviously if the deaths are so high, like you're saying, if they were to give the true RNA vaccine, then it could be that, you know, there'd be devastation in care homes. Yeah. So, and if they are not putting the true mRNA vaccine in each vial, then that's a crime of commercial fraud and misrepresentation, you know?
Folks, do get on to DoloresCahill.com, WorldFreedomAlliance.org, FreedomAirway.com, .org, yeah, WorldFreedomAlliance.org.
And freedomairway.com. We're actually going out on a limb and going to be hiring planes in as soon as we can.
It's an amazing development, that. Do me a favor, come back on again real soon, Dolores. Lovely to speak with you. It really is.
Oh, I'd be delighted. And should I just say that the Airways is with the 4 people from North America, so I'm doing it with 5 co-founders. They will come out soon, but at the minute I'm very happy to go public with it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it. Folks, get on to DoloresCahill.com, WorldFreedomAlliance.org, and to find out about the Airways, it's FreedomAirway.com. You've been listening to Professor Dolores Cahill live on The Richie Allen Show for Wednesday, the 6th of January, 2021. Thanks to Dolores. I'm out of here. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 5 o'clock, usual time. Mark Byerski will be on the programme tomorrow. Second hour, you don't want to miss that. I will have another guest in the first hour as well. Look after yourselves and one another. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, wherever you happen to be in the world. RichieAllen.co.uk, by the way, is going to change. I know I've been saying this for ages. I was on the phone with the great Hayden Hewitt today. By this day next week, by Wednesday next week, there will be a brand new RichieAllen.co.uk website. It'll be packed full of very interesting features, and articles will be published there regularly as well. It's going to look all singing and all dancing. It's been in the planning this for months, but it's finally about ready to be launched. Big shout out to Hayden Hewitt, the one and only. I'll see you tomorrow. I'm going to go and watch some foosball. City and United live in a few minutes in the Cup semi-final. Bye from me. Bye now. Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right, doing the best you can. Well, it's all right, as long as you lend a hand. You can sit around and wait for the phone to ring, waiting for someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe down the rain. Well, it's alright, even if they say you're wrong. Well, it's alright, sometimes you gotta be strong. Well, it's somewhere down the road when somebody plays.